If the situation in Japan isn't bad enough, seismologists there and in Australia and other places are predicting that there's a very good chance, 7 out of 10, they say, that they're going to see another significant earthquake in that region within days, perhaps. Earthquakes, for whatever reason, tend to come in clusters. And this incident, as horrible as it is not the only disastrous earthquake we've had in recent years. There was the 8.8 quake that shook Chile, and of course the recent very disastrous earthquake in New Zealand that struck Christchurch. Simon Winchester joins us now, author of The Map That Changed the World, and most recently his book Atlantic. You know, Simon, you wrote an article about the earthquake in Japan, and I want to read the mantra you say that we should be learning, which is: mankind inhabits this earth subject to geological consent, which can be withdrawn at any time. It's a grim picture that you paint.
Sorry, John.
Do you have that certificate of geologic consent? I'd love to see it.
I hand it out, yeah. But I can withdraw it at any time. And the big question is now, I mean, where is it going to be withdrawn next? And what you say, Celeste, about earthquakes occurring in clusters, although there's some controversy within the geological community about whether there are patterns, but it seems when you stand back from it and look at the world as a whole, and you look at a specific tectonic plate, let's say the Great Pacific Plate, which dominates the argument at the moment, that an event on one side of it a few weeks later triggers, well, maybe triggers is not the right word, there is an event on another side shortly thereafter. But as you've said, we had the 8.8 in Chile, we had the two, one in September that I was at, in Christchurch, and then the one February 22nd in Christchurch. Now, Japan, so that's three of the four corners, as it were, of this square, if you can think of the Pacific Plate as being roughly square-shaped. And the untouched side is a side where there are three enormous faults, none of which have caused a problem for over a century and are therefore primed to rupture. One of those is the famous one, the San Andreas Fault, which underpins San Francisco but goes all the way down to Palm Springs. Another, a sort of country cousin of the San Andreas, is the Hayward Fault, which goes underneath Oakland and Berkeley. And more ominous of all, in light of what happened in Sumatra in 2004 and what happened in Japan this last week, is the undersea fault, known as the Cascadia Fault, which is 1,300 miles long. It's about 60 miles offshore. It's the junction of the Pacific and the Juan de Fuca plates, and it goes from off Vancouver Island straight down in a more or less due southerly direction, paralleling the coast of North America, Washington, Oregon, and California. If that were to rupture, that would cause a huge, and I mean huge,
unbelievably epic proportions. Yeah. And in your discussion of this, you talk about, again, going back to your statement that we're here by geological consent, your solution to that is then be aware of natural forces and avoid them.
If we choose to live in beautiful parts of the world, we've got to remember that, generally speaking, that beauty is caused by tectonic forces, so mountain chains and spectacular bays and the kind of things that you see. Everything is geology. I mean, this is another mantra of mine. Everything is geology. Everything in this room is made from things that exist in and of and around the earth. So we have to take it very seriously. And yet, of course, the subject is derided in school. It's rocks for jocks and so forth. But this business of consent, if we choose to live somewhere that is beautiful, we've got to remember that the forces that made that beauty can also destroy. They can take away.
You know, there's so many levels, though, to this disaster in Japan, and it's horrifying, and it's absolutely moving to see the images of the Japanese people and those who have died there. But this is a natural disaster that, as we've been talking about this morning, has then become a man-made disaster because of the nuclear plants that were there on what they thought was not an active fault line but turned out to be.
That is going to be one of the decisions that people... I'm rather like building that dam across the Yangtze in an area that the Chinese know full well is seismically active. How on earth could they build as many nuclear power stations in a country, Japan, that is known to be one of the most seismically active on the planet? I mean, it's akin to putting a nuclear power station on top of the San Andreas Fault. It's just very imprudent.
Spin the globe. I mean, the whole Ring of Fire, you described it as a plate, a square plate, but the Ring of Fire is home to more than 100 million people, and that's if you only count the cities And all of the cities, the big ones around the Ring of Fire, are, you know, 10 million, 16 million.
And you look at the 10 largest earthquakes that have ever happened on this planet, they're all on the Ring of Fire. Biggest in Alaska, Chile, Japan, you know, 9.0 and above. They're big. They're all on that plate.
We're speaking to Simon Winchester, author of The Map That Changed the World, and most recently the great book Atlantic. And so what are we to take from this, other than the fact that, you know, the Earth, we are insignificant beneath the forces of the geological forces of the Earth. Moving forward, what lesson do we learn, not just from Japan, but from Chile and New Zealand, and even going back 100 years, let's talk about what we should have learned from San Francisco.
Well, you psychologically prepare for this kind of an event.
How can you psychologically prepare?
Well, I mean, they do in Japan, and that's why in Kobe 10 years ago and now in this, the casualties are less than they might otherwise be, less than, for instance, they were in Haiti, which was a smaller earthquake, yet because the people are totally unprepared, caused massive devastations. Build stronger buildings, build stronger freeways. I mean, they learned that in San Francisco in 89 when the Harbor Freeway
pancaked. Stop building. I mean, you know, 1,000 years ago, 500 years ago, an earthquake happens, some sheep fall over. I mean, that's really it. It's really humans uniquely are vulnerable here.
Well, this is certainly something that I keep rabbiting on and everyone gets bored by it. This planet is littered with the ruins of cities that were built where they should not have been built. I mean, Pompeii, Heliopolis. We build in America, particularly, cities wherever we want to. Katrina devastated one of them, yet we rebuild it. I mean, how insane is that?
Well, you know, this is particularly ironic coming in over the news out of the National Geographic that they think they've discovered
Atlantis.
The remains of Atlantis somewhere in southern Spain, which they think was wiped out by a tsunami.
Indeed. And it's worth pointing out, incidentally, going back to the Cascadia fault, if that were to rupture, the last time it did rupture, 280 years ago, where did the tsunami occur most devastatingly? Japan. It went entirely westwards across the Pacific and devastated northern Japan. So the Cascadia is something we all ought to watch out for.
Although we're not saying that people need to not live in Japan.
No, of course not. But the Japanese are prudent. The Americans are not prudent at the moment, not as prudent as they might be.
Interesting. Simon Winchester, author of The Map That Changed the World, and also recently his book Atlantic, he wrote a very interesting article, and I want to repeat this sentence that you wrote again, because it is so telling. Mankind inhabits this earth subject to geological consent, which can be withdrawn at any time. And you say the next one's coming around San Francisco.
It's possibly, but
who knows when?
Who knows?
He'd rather predict the final four, I think.
Which is hard enough.
Yeah. Hard enough, yes.
Simon Winchester, author of Atlantic. We want to return to our conversation with Simon Winchester. He's author of many things, among them The Map That Changed the World, and recently the book Atlantic. You know, Simon, you were just talking about the fact that you feel Americans aren't prudent about natural disasters in the way that perhaps the Japanese are pragmatic. That would suggest, though, that we haven't learned from accidents of the past, maybe even haven't learned from nuclear accidents of the past.
Well, we all remember, at least those of us old enough to say, remember Harrisburg and the Three Mile Island event, which people say, rather glibly, is the most serious nuclear accident in American history. Well, that's not true. And this goes to my feeling that, you know, people forget the history. There was a lethal nuclear accident in 1961, the only lethality caused by a reactor going into meltdown and entering a state of what's called prompt criticality. What happened was it was an experimental reactor in Idaho in the National Reactor Testing Station. It was called the SL-1. There were three men working on it. It is said, I mean, the inquiry was somewhat ambiguous in its conclusions, that the person removed, for suicidal reasons, a control rod. He was supposed to pull it out 4 inches. He actually pulled it out 26 inches. This caused the reactor to go, as I say, prompt critical, which means it turned into a mini nuclear weapon and melted phenomenally quickly. Huge spike of energy. I mean, 20 gigabytes.
You can still see that facility in Idaho Falls.
You can indeed. Yeah. And it slammed the whole nuclear pile, which weighed several tons, thundered upwards under a huge steam explosion, crashed 9 feet upwards against the concrete ceiling of the containment, impaling one man to the ceiling. It took 10 days to remove his body, which was incredibly radioactive. All three men died, not from radiation, but from wounds sustained in the explosion, and their bodies are now still to this day buried in lead caskets in concrete vaults in Idaho, although one of them was moved into a concrete vault in Arlington National Cemetery. So we know quite a bit about critical nuclear accidents. I mean, before that, there was another one in Los Alamos, but that was an experiment in 1958 where someone died in a criticality accident. But meltdowns, we're not unfamiliar with in this country. And what's happening in Japan, there is a precedent in America.
Well, then let me ask you your response to assurances from the Nuclear Regulatory Committee that we are safe from this kind of incident in the United States. Are we safe?
I think the NRC is a very responsible organization. We learned from the SL-1 accident. We've never designed a reactor like it, and the number of fail-safe operations to make sure that the kind of sudden withdrawal of that control rod, it would never happen again. I think the way atomic reactors are managed, peaceful atomic reactors in this country are managed by the Americans, is actually very good indeed. I'm a great proponent of, I believe in nuclear power. I have problems with burying the waste. I mean, particularly this, how do we look after the waste in Yucca Mountain for 100,000 years? How do you design the signs which says danger, which will be understood in 100,000 years? I mean, that's a very interesting competition is going on to design such signs. But that reminds you what a dragon's tail we're tickling here in dealing with neutrons and high-energy protons and things. Americans, I think, manage the plants here very well indeed. I do have faith in the NRC, yes.
Okay, well, more faith than, I guess, in Tokyo's.
Indeed.
Okay, Simon Winchester, author of The Map That Changed the World, also author of the recent book Atlantic, talking about the geological consent that allows us to occupy our little rental property on top of the Earth and the moments at which that is sometimes withdrawn. Simon, thank you so much.
Thanks.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.